We're going to move on and talk about pylons because in a way it links to our last discussion there about having clean energy and moving away from fossil fuels. We're going to talk about the pylons controversy. And a quick summary, Ergrid is implementing a €3.2 billion investment programme called Grid 25, under which it wants to develop and upgrade the electricity transmission network. And that will involve building 800 kilometres of new power lines and upgrading 2,000 kilometres of existing lines, doubling the size of the electricity grid. The three controversial projects are Grid West, which plans to link North Mayo to County Roscommon, an interconnector between North and South, and the Grid Link project linking Leinster and Munster. And I'm joined for this part of the discussion by John Fitzgerald, who is Director of Grid Development with Ergrid. John, thank you very much for coming in and you're very welcome to the programme. Why do you believe these projects are vital?
Okay, well, just firstly, there's about 6,000 kilometres of overhead transmission line in the country, and we're increasing that by about 10 to 15%, so it's not doubling. So I think it's vital to keep the lights on 24/7 for today and tomorrow for businesses and communities across the island. It's something that's needed to upgrade the system. It's been 30 years since there's been a significant increase in transmission capacity. We needed to bring energy from our generation to our customers. That's part of our business. It's what we provide on a non-discriminatory basis for all customers.
Tom McGuirk, you have been opposed to this. You've written about this and you've spoken about it on TV and radio. Are there pylons planned for close to where you live?
Yes. If one of the routes goes by, it would go through my family home. I think we've got to look at this in a different context. This is now a social crisis in this country. We're not just talking about electricity. We're not just talking about building pylons. We're talking about thousands of family homes will be affected. Their property values will be devastated. Thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of land will be sanitized because I don't think farmers are going to graze underneath them. We have an environmental crisis. This beautiful countryside affects tourism. A countryside that I think we've an obligation to pass on to our children has been passed on to us. Thousands of protected historic property is going to be affected. And we have the questions about, human health and animal health. These are huge questions.
So you have concerns on all fronts, health, environmental, the impact on the environment.
To Ergrid, it's a simple process of improving the electricity supply and the network supply. But this has much wider implications. And I have never seen anything like the level of public anger on the ground right across about 18 counties in Ireland. Even tonight, there are people meeting. The kids are in classes drawing pictures of pylons. People feel that they are being overrun by Ergrid. They are being ignored by politicians and the government. In the beginning, Pat Rabbit was making fun of the wind farm objectors. He was saying that people objecting to pylons are jumping up and down. There's nobody sympathetic out there. There's a desperate need for information. We don't have the information. And in the middle of all of this, Ergrid, you can't use an FOI to find out what's going on. I mean, for example, I could ask you, John, what percentage, if you finish this, what percentage will come from wind farm of the power?
In the country?
No, going through your new system.
Just a couple of points. For Ergrid, it's not as simple just upgrading the network. We understand that there are people and communities affected by this, and it is a large-scale infrastructure development. It's probably the largest consultation that's been done, particularly the GridLink project.
Are they being ignored, though? Are people being ignored, Tom McGuirk says?
No. We've had a huge consultation, and there's a bit of damned if you do and damned if you don't. There are probably multiple sets of communities who are looking at the prospect of having a line route through their community, and that is something which has fed into a huge level of public feedback, and I wouldn't disagree with all of Tom's points by any manner of means. There's been a huge level of feedback.
35,000 submissions.
35,000.
And what are you doing with them?
Well, we extended the consultation because the level of this ramped up throughout. 2013 was a very busy year. Mm-hmm. 2012, we were also consulting, but we hadn't put lines on maps, so it hadn't got traction, or the communities hadn't appreciated that it was not effective.
35,000 submissions. Are you reading them all?
Well, we are. Well,
how many people have you working?
Many of them.
To read 35,000?
Just let him answer.
Tom, many of them are There are a large number of significant one-off. There are templates, and we have classified them. We've been through them all and categorised them. It's going to take a long time to read them. We have been through sufficient and listened enough last year to appreciate the major themes coming through. And the major themes, we've already set out how we're going to respond to those. So initially, we recognise that there is a lot of concern. We're going to look at underground routes, which will be a separate route, and that will, like, we had looked at underground for this project and we do review the need. We had not consulted on it in terms of its costs, and people are seeing a lot of underground.
Are you looking at underground in response to some of the 35,000?
Well, we are going to compare underground with at the best overhead route. We're going to get down to a single route as quickly as we can. I think there's a huge thing for me in this, and that is that if you are going to put an overhead or infrastructure near somebody's residence, one of the things that they would want to know was, well, why does it have to be here? Why can't it be over there? So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, end up we've got a huge level and 35,000 responses, whereas we might have got a smaller response had we not gone out with so many routes. What we are doing in terms of responding to those, just to come back to Tom's point, we are looking at doing an underground route.
What length?
Independent expert. Pardon?
What length underground?
Well, the entirety. We're looking at...
You're looking at the entire system underground?
No. The grid link project, the entirety of the route. There are two things you can do in relation to underground. You can do some partial undergrounding, or you can do entirety of undergrounding with a DC solution. There are technical issues with that, and there are costs, and there are environmental.
So you're looking at putting the whole grid link project underground?
We're going to look at a solution that will meet the need, some of the need. And we're going to do that. We're going to compare it in cost and efficacy and environmental side by side.
Is that because of public response?
It is in response to the public saying, I was never consulted and I believe this could be put underground. So there is a journey that the public have not been on. We have looked at it and now the public want to look at it.
You see, John, I'm absolutely honest with you. People think you're only saying that to get over the elections. But because the government parties are going to be devastated in these elections. They think you're over saying that. And the purpose of the McGuinness Tribunal is to come down and say underground is technically impossible and massively expensive and it'll hit all the people in their electricity bills. That's you've got to convince people that's not what you're at here.
It's not what we're at. And like if you read I've been out and I've met with people along the route and there is a visual disamenity and there is a sensitivity to it.
But
and
you knew all of this. Didn't come as a surprise when you got this.
But every project is different in terms of scale.
And you always said it was much more expensive to put them underground.
And for most projects, it is more expensive. The higher the scale, the higher the voltage, the more expensive it can be. But it depends project to project and some are more compatible with it than others. For instance, at 110 kV level, and Tom will know this from the Danish example, you can put underground lines. The lower the voltage, the more you can put them underground as AC. So increasingly, we have done that. Traditionally, it was done in cities, but we're doing it increasingly where it fits and meets the need.
But John, nowhere else in the world have they put anything of this length underground. The Danes got to 20 kilometres.
You're right, in AC, but I'm talking about HVDC, and we have our own HVDC scheme.
Which could go underground, the whole length of grid 25.
Tom, we have a HVDC scheme which goes from Woodland in County Meath to Deeside in North Wales. Now, I'm saying if the public want to see and know what the cost is of undergrounding this, we can provide that and do a comparative analysis between that. And it will meet the need in a different way. It'll have pros and cons. There are disbenefits. Mm-hmm. Number one, we have an AC system, so this is not plug or play. You can't break into it. 30 years ago, we had major transmission lines put across this country from Clare to Dublin through, right across the country, two significant lines. Since that, we have broken into those lines once on the Northern Line in Galway to facilitate a major investor in generation. And more recently, we have a proposal to break into the Southern Line to Kildare to facilitate reinforcement in Kilkenny. You can't do that with DC. It's like a motorway with no... But it's the only way. It's the only way to do it, Tom.
Pat Rabbit on television said that people who couldn't sell their properties, they would be compensated at market value. Was he correct?
I didn't actually hear that program, but I can tell you what I've
got it exactly right.
I don't dispute that, but I can tell you what the proposals are, because it's not just on the underground, and we will do that side by side, and we look at the technicals, the environmental, and the cost. And I think that's important that people see and come on that journey. Secondly, we're looking at a community gain, and that is arising out of 2012 government policy for the visual disamenity associated with
overhead. Was Pat Rabbit right in what he said?
No,
you won't answer any questions. Okay. You're just reading from the speech.
No, I'm not reading from
the
speech.
Yes, you are. I asked you the question. Was Pat Rabbit right? He told people on television
that
thousands of people out there are really frightened that they won't be able to sell their properties. Was he right in what he said?
I can tell you what the community gain proposal is. And the community gain proposal, and I'm not sure he was in what he said, so I can only tell you what I know in terms of the community gain proposals that we have put forward. And that is that for there'd be a community fund for 400 kV overhead lines. There'd be a community fund which would be €40,000 per kilometre, and that
is. There's no talk about buying people's houses at market value.
There's two aspects to it. No, there is that for communities affected by the that host this infrastructure on behalf of all electricity users.
And you'll decide the compensation. You'll decide the
level of compensation. We proposed the compensation in response to, and we looked at this.
But you'll decide it, John.
Tom. Like, if you let me finish.
But will you decide the compensation?
We will make a proposal. And if Bord Pleanála, in considering a planning application, decide that it is, you know, they will ultimately rule and on that and determine if they feel it's adequate in response to government policy.
John, you wreck somebody's house and then decide how much money they're getting.
No, like, that is the community fund. There is a proximity allowance, which is, I think, what you may be referring to. And that is for houses that are within 200 metres, plus or minus 200 metres of overhead infrastructure that's put in place as part of Grid 25.
What's planned for them?
They will get a fund. They will get a payment of €30,000 when they're 50 metres from the line. We target being a minimum of 50 metres. But with the amount of ribbon development in this country, and we talked about planning and floodplains and so on, it is very difficult to put a transmission line across the country without coming in proximity. So in recognition of that, there is a payment of 30,000 for someone who is 50 metres, sinking to 5,000 when they're 200 metres. So within a 400 metre corridor of any new 400 kV overhead transmission line that's proposed, there will be such a proximity allowance.
Okay. In response to that, Tom,
I'll come back to you, Tom, because I'm conscious of two other guests here who have to contribute to this discussion as well. And Marcella Corcoran-Kennedy, you wanted to come in earlier on about whether or not is the government leaning on Urgrid to get all of this past the local and European elections in May to get to the other side?
I totally reject that. The government's response was as a result of the phenomenal public consultation. When you look at 35,000 people becoming involved in it, you have to stop and take stock of what's being said. And I think it was the responsible thing to do, and I think it's democracy in action. And, you know, it's easy to be cynical and it's easy to be wearing coloured glasses or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that a very eminent Mrs. Justice McGuinness is chairing it. There are two economists on it, highly regarded people. There are energy experts on it. And I think it will be very interesting to see the outcome of their deliberations on the reports. And I think they will serve to, give comfort to people, because there is, contrary to what Tom said, there's a huge amount of information actually out there, and it's trying to distill down what's actually factual and what's not, I think.
Well, why isn't there FOI on Airgrid then?
Excuse me, would you mind if I answered?
Why isn't there FOI on Airgrid?
I understood that Audrey was actually the chair of this
programme. But I'm entitled to ask a question.
Well, indeed, but I would like to, now that I am 3 minutes getting a word in, I would like to be able to finish it, if you don't mind. And I also think that you got a right good run there. You have 15 minutes. In relation to the report that Mrs. McGuinness will come up with, I think that will serve to reassure people that certainly information that has been put out there is in fact factual and accurate. And, you know, I note that Tom is completely exercised about this because he is personally affected by it.
Yeah.
There are communities all across this country who have been involved in energy generation for years, decades. I live in a county in Offaly where we had three power stations, where we had Bord na Móna, who were harvesting peat to supply to those power stations. We were very happy, I suppose, on the one hand, but we suffered the discomfort of it. The people in Money Point had a huge twin towers down there for their energy generation. The landscape was spoiled. In fact, you could go so far as to say that every man-made structure is spoiling the landscape. And, you know, I think we have to be conscious of the fact this is about energy security. And it's energy security is something that the people of the Southwest deserve, in my view.
Okay.
And I think if every effort is made to ensure that the routes are as far away as possible from the individuals, the individual homes.
50 metres.
If they're as far away as possible. We don't even know where the line is yet, because I understand that it hasn't been decided upon as yet. And, you know, there are people already living within 50 metres of pylons. In other parts of the country, they're 440 kV, if I'm not wrong.
Can I just come in here?
Well, that's Audrey's choice.
Yeah. First, John, and then you, Tom.
On the 50 metres, we do try and avoid dwellings and towns, and there's a variety of constraints and constraints mapping where we can't. And on the Grid West project, my understanding is that the we've got down to a preferred route. We will be able to keep more than 50 metres. And on the North-South project, for a few houses, we may not be able to. Where we can't, and if an instance arises where we can't, we will engage, and perhaps this is Tom's point, we will engage on a case-by-case, exceptional basis with the people whom we're not able to keep 50 metres away with. So we will enter negotiations with them in good faith.
Tom McGurk.
Do you think it's reasonable to have a 43-metre pylon 50 metres to somebody's home? Because that's the closest you're coming. And you haven't even pointed out whether it's their home or their garden. Do you think that's reasonable? The man who was appointed to run your organisation said he wouldn't like to live near one. So why should we?
Well, I think it's to the corner of the dwelling rather than the property. And I think you're back to a point, and this is back to Gridlink and the huge response we're after getting. And there are a variety of concerns.
But is that reasonable?
There are a variety of concerns coming out, and I think if I were asked, and I have been asked, would I like to live beside a pylon? And, well, I certainly wouldn't go looking for one. But were I asked to, I'd have to answer three questions. And one would be, why does it have to be near me? Therefore, all the routes. Why does it have to be on overhead? Can it not be underground? Therefore, the huge amount of calls for it, the undergrounding to be done in a transparent manner before the public. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, Why does it have to be so at all? Why is it needed? And if you've looked at our energy sector and the amount of we've transformed electricity industry in the last 10, 15 years from something that was based on predominantly imported fossil fuels and oil, there's literally no oil generation in the country at all in the last couple of years.
So what percentage is coming from wind farms? And that question I asked you 50 minutes ago.
You asked me a number of questions.
No, but that one.
I think at the moment it's very windy, so it varies month to month. I think we're up around in the low teens at the moment. So we're
but when your new system is in and all the wind farms are built, what percentage?
Well, the target is 40%.
40%
of the electricity. So when you turn on your light switch, and something we have a proud tradition of in this country, and perhaps we are a little bit engineering focused, and we are getting better at the public consultation, but we've kept the lights on for a long time in this country in an innovative manner as an island nation, and we've moved it on. And I think the people expect and industry demands that they have reliable, affordable electricity.
Okay.
And the challenge is to do that
I
into
want to
the
bring
future
in Professor
for the next
John
generation.
John, you've been sitting patiently. Do you have concerns about this?
I think my concern is, in addition to the people, I think we have to have concerns about the heritage of the country, and in particular the scenic aspects of the country on which our bread and butter depends from a tourist point of view. So I think
You're involved with Antashka, aren't you?
Yes, wearing that hat, I think we'd be concerned that we have no national landscapes policy. We've had a proposal in the last two programmes for government for a national landscapes policy, and nothing has happened on them. We might have got out of some of the trouble we're in at the moment had we actually advanced that as well. But putting overground cables across scenic assets such as the Black Stairs Mountains, to me, is like selling the family jewels, family silver. It doesn't make sense at all. So I think we have to have a mix here. It may be appropriate that we go overground in certain areas, and I wonder if we have chosen the right routes. I mean, we have very powerful GIS technology available to us now where we should be able to find lines of least resistance. And I wonder, why aren't we using the motorway network, for example, as one possible artery? There are ways of getting around some of these problems. I think also it has to be said that undergrounding is not a perfect solution from a climate point of view. We are committing a lot of concrete, a lot of encasement of underground cables and a big land take. So there will be horses for courses. I think we have to be very cognizant of the fact that, yes, we should avoid, like the plague, anything which damages our scenic amenity and which has potential health effects. But we may have a time and a place for overheads as well, perhaps by a better route.
Tom McGurk, what do you say to Marcella's point that, you know, there are existing pylons, there have been many energy developments down the decades, and, you know,
nothing on this scale. You're talking about thousands of kilometres. You're talking about families being affected from Kildare down to Wexford, Wexford across to Cork, up the west coast. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, this is a massive, massive plan. And I think the other question to be asked about all of this is, this began in 2007 with Eamon Ryan. Mm. And the calculation on this transmission system was made upon the energy realities in 2007. Recently, it's changing all the time. Fracking has come into the United Kingdom, so the transmission of electricity over there may not be as popular. You also have a situation where increasingly faith has been lost in wind farms. For example, if I ask you now, John, during the last 3 days, how many wind farms were switched on when we had enormous winds?
I don't know offhand.
They have to be turned off.
The wind generation has been exceptionally good in the last number of months.
But aren't they paid a subsidy to turn them off, to not produce at certain times?
They're curtailed when there's too much generation and when the demand is too low.
When there's too much wind, they're turned off.
When there's too much wind, they're curtailed. But over the last 6 months, we've been reversing. We've been exporting the wind to Britain.
You see what I'm saying? The 2007 calculations. What the McGuinness Review should do is go back and look at the 2007 calculations, look at what Eamon Ryan came up with, look at that is still required for years, because we're not Luddites, we're not against improving the electricity system in this country, and obviously quality power is required, and it's required throughout the country. But you can't say you have two choices here. You either improve electricity and destroy thousands of homes. I mean, those seem to be the two choices that I can see at the moment. And you were the first to say it could go underground, but, I mean, I put my finger in the wounds before I believe you.
Well, can I just respond to that in saying that the public want to know and be assured and see for themselves in an open and transparent manner a comparison of the merits of underground versus overhead. Now, the 99% of transmission in OECD countries is overhead transmission, high voltage. There are underground initiatives underway. We monitor technology. I don't want to preempt the study by saying it's going to be X times. It vary project to project. In some countries, it can be up to 40 times as much, depending on the nature of the undergrounding and how big it is and the tunnels and so on. It can be single multiples, so it will vary. I know it'll be different for Grid West than it will for Grid Link, mm-hmm. because they're different projects. Each project is unique. The scale of this isn't to be overstated. We do have significant amount of overhead transmission around the country, 6,000 kilometres. We're not doubling that. We're simply increasing it. And I do recognise there are significant projects within areas, but it's not unprecedented in the country.
But don't you also have another problem? Because for historic reasons, we have a huge number of one-off dwellings in the country.
Yeah.
We have a huge number of small farms. This is not the landscape of Germany or Sweden or the United States of America or Australia. This is a landscape full of homes, full of people's houses, full of historic things that the professors refer to. I mean, thousands of historic objects which are protected by law will be destroyed by these pylons.
I just want to be clear that AirGrid has no interest in putting pylons on the landscape. We're interested in keeping the lights on in a sustainable, reliable manner for today and planning for tomorrow.
Well, what about John Sweeney's suggestion about the motorways? The motorway network?
The motorways can be appropriate, and we do use roads from time to time for, but they're not the routing principles for overhead transmission lines, where we try and screen it using foliage and backdrops and so on. And there's more transmission than people appreciate, because a lot of it is reasonably well screened where possible. Now, for a cable or an underground route, you may well follow the M9 or the M7 and use ducts, and that is possible with a HVDC solution. For an overground route, the routing principles, we try and avoid population centres, whereas the roads try and go to them. So, but there are pros and cons that will come out of this.
Why does your pylon have to be 43 metres?
Well, that's about clearances, and particularly in relation to combine harvesters and large farm machinery, we have to give certain clearance. The conductors are live. The pylons themselves are relatively harmless. They're just designed to give clearance from the three phases of conductors that are bringing the power from our generation to our homes and industry.
John Sweeney, can we have clean energy without these pylons?
I think we have to look to a solution in the future where energy is not necessarily a huge national infrastructure project, but we have the possibility of generating a lot of energy locally. We have the small scale wind farms, we have the small scale biomass, we have a lot of opportunities to do renewables without having a macro type approach. We do certainly need to strengthen, I agree, our transmission system, because we have our centres of consumption in the east, we have our renewable options in the west, so there is a need for tackling the problem to some extent. But I think we need a national energy policy which emphasises energy efficiency, and we may not need, as Tom is saying, we may not need quite as much as we thought we did in 2007. But we will
McGuinness
certainly
is not looking
some.
At that, John. McGuinness is not inquiring into that.
Well, I think it's time we did, because, I mean, we simply are becoming a more energy-efficient society as time goes on. I look after a lot of the Green Schools initiatives, and I know how much energy can be saved, for example, when I go into a green school and see 30% saved in 1 year from a green school. I know the Green Campus initiatives are doing very well. So people are becoming more sensitive to energy efficiency and energy use as energy gets more expensive. We may not need all of this in the future, and we may need
and
we
John
may need
Fitzgerald,
to look at other
are you in ErGrid prepared to consider that perhaps the what was outlined in 2007, the situation has changed in terms of our energy requirements?
It absolutely has. There's like the Celtic Tiger has left town, and there's been a lot of value destruction in the economy and around the country as well. And what we do with our projects is, and this project was launched in 2012, the GridLink project, so it was predicated on the demand forecasts and scenarios coming out of that. There'd be stage gate reviews. This isn't going into planning for a number of years, 2016. There'd be stage gate reviews prior to that. And these projects take years to build and develop, so you've got to look out in the longer term. But if the need changes, if something changes in terms of usage or demand or generation, these projects will not go ahead blind to the need. They will review, there'll be stage gate reviews carried out on these projects.
Have you taken on board the fact that in many ways this is the greatest challenge to the right of public property and private property in this country? And at the end of the day, this poses a fundamental question for the citizen under the Constitution, their right to protection of their property under the Constitution. That's a huge question, and something on this scale is going to pose those questions one day sooner or later.
Like, ErGrid is a non-profit based state agency set up to making sure there's a secure economic energy supply. We work with ESB networks 24/7 to keep the lights on all the time for everybody. And now, if the public do not accept infrastructure projects and the underground, infrastructure projects in general, they do require public acceptance, and we're fully aware of that, and that's why we're out consulting. And it is a difficult process for everybody, but I think it's the right thing to do, and we will come up with an answer. I believe we'll come up with an answer that's right for Ireland Inc., and I think the developments are positive ones. So I'm not set back by them. And were we setting up a project today, we would be looking at the underground in a more transparent, open way, without the need for an independent energy panel, independent expert panel. We would be doing that, and that's something which we are adopting, because we are learning from the and we're listening to people's concerns.
Marcella.
Well, I would like to think that in areas where it's possible to underground, particularly in areas of scenic amenities, most definitely that it would be done. But I have to come back to the point that we really do consume an awful lot of energy, even though we have to try and reduce our dependence on it. And I came across a figure recently which really put it in perspective for me, which is Intel. Intel used the same amount of electricity in one day as the whole county of Kilkenny. And so when you're looking at companies that need that level of guaranteed supply, I think, I know, John, you're the expert on this, but I think there's something like maybe 12 or 14 companies that are straight into the national grid, yeah, because such is their need for constant, secure energy supply. So you're looking at it from that perspective as well.
But that's not the problem. We recognise that. The problem is how we get it to them. Nobody's arguing about the need for electricity. Nobody's arguing about the need for power. Nobody's arguing about the upgrading of the network system. The argument is about how we get it to them.
And the GridLink project, Tom.
As I'm not an engineer, but I understand that it's a cable that's required to get it from A to B. Is that right?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And if you look at it in terms of where Intel could and couldn't locate, we've tried to have a regional balanced development, and you won't have that unless you can get the power where you need it. So were someone of that scale to consider locating, they would look to the transmission system to see where they would get it. So, and some parts of the country have stronger network than others. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to address those issues, and you never miss the large employer you never had. There's a bit of that to it as well.
There's also the health system. There's a meeting in Trim on Friday night. Professor Dennis Henshaw's come from Bristol University. He's particularly concerned about the effect on health. I know there was an EU Commission report yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that is still, there's still a big question about the effect, and also the effect. Mm-hmm. There was a report from New Zealand that mares and pregnant cattle can abort as a result of high tension. That is all out there, and those questions have to be answered.
I think but if they're underground, will they not be closer to you?
No, there isn't a problem underground, apparently.
Not true.
But they're closer to you.
I think, wherever you have a current, it's the, you know, it's if magnetic fields are associated with the currents, so there are magnetic fields associated with the transport of electricity, full stop, and it is a fact.
So it doesn't matter if they're overhead or underground?
It doesn't, no. There would still be, in fact, they're both perfectly safe. And I think just to come back to the report that came out yesterday, what that report stated was that there was no causal link between electromagnetic fields from transmission lines and any adverse effects to health. And that was reported widely yesterday, and a number of people spoke on it. I'm not a health expert. We monitor these and comply with them. Mm-hmm. And we welcome the fact
that... But you'll be aware that there are other reports that say there are health concerns.
There are reports on pretty much
reports
contradicting.
On
you can look at the reports that'll contradict each other till the cows come home.
John Sweeney.
This is an EU report. The World Health Organization.
In all honesty, said that it could not find evidence to establish the link. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually come out and say that there was no link.
Yeah. And there was no causal link.
That they could find no evidence of a causal link. A correlation is not causation, and this is the difficulty with all of these studies, that it's very hard to get rid of the confounding factors in affecting health. So the EU has more or less sat on the fence in this report. They haven't said that there is evidence of no link. They have said they haven't been able to find evidence of no link, but that necessarily does not rule out the possibility. I think with DC, you don't have that problem that you do have with AC in terms of an electromagnetic field.
Okay.
You have a magnetic field, it's just not an alternating at 50 hertz.
Okay, thank you all very much indeed.
Like the Earth.
We're out of time.